We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt, that fine gentleman over there in the heart of the Midwest, the so-called monster of the podcasting midway, Dan Rubenstein, sir. Looking tan today on the video. How are you?
I'm fantastic, and you know, we had a different concept planned for today's show. Peel back the curtain, the onions, the kimono, what have you. We had a different concept planned, and then you noticed something that there are some early lines.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Baby. Was it FanDuel, DraftKings? Some well-placed online sports book had put some lines out. And at first, I was a little bit confused because it's May, and obviously it's early, and there are early lines, but typically, you're pretty conservative about how our plan, and we plan ahead of time, and we really approach things thoughtfully. And sometimes it just takes time for me to get in that mode, to get in that wagering mode, to get in that, you know, matchup mode. And that, you know, we don't get into it in, you know, previews, July, August, and then we're previewing games all year long, September, October, November, what have you, December. And here you are with everything being nice and peaceful in the spring. And the altar of Dan just slumbering beneath the ocean floor.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just recharging after another successful year.
Successful is relative, but continue.
And then you're bringing that H-bomb tie to the proverbial Podzilla, Gojira, you know, Bling Kong, Jurassic Park, and the Tyrannosaurus Betts?
Sure.
No?
That's not bad, actually. I do kind of like that.
Tyrannosaurus Betts, and all of the sudden, you're awakening something within the show that I don't know if you were fully aware what the consequences might be bringing the altar to the surface so early on.
We have early college football lines for all 13 weeks.
It's insane.
Of the season. It's not every game every week,
right,
but it's a lot of the notable games. I made a list this morning at about 6 a.m. with all of them, and I sent it to you. Yeah, I'm in. It has awakened something on this end as well. I have an intro sound that's completely ridiculous that I will play momentarily, but I am excited about this, and I'll tell you why in a little bit. We're going to go through those lines, and we're just going to call out some of them. Maybe they feel right. Maybe they feel off. Maybe we're just curious and want to talk a little bit more amongst ourselves about them. We'll get into that. I promise you, this show, all of our episodes, driven by our good friends over at Geico. If you like the show, do not hesitate to hit that subscribe button. We do two public episodes a week. We also do bonus content, which you can find out there at verballers.com. Not only do we offer a weekly Brew and A, but we offer early access to this episode, all of our episodes. Get access to the video versions of this episodes. Perhaps if you want to see just how tan Dan Rubenstein actually is, you can see that if you become a premium Verballer over at verballers.com. We also offer access to our Discord server, which I am pleased to say has been teeming with life and enthusiasm and just good people, man.
That's true.
All throughout the long, cold months of this here off season. It is May, which is why I'm thrilled when I saw this drop of lines come out, because it gives us content to discuss. We kicked it around a little bit on the Discord server. That was how I knew there was a little bit of steam on this.
Yeah, that's true.
And decided that we were going to run with it, pull a bit of a U-turn and go in a different direction as per what we had originally planned. Last but not least, solidgiveaway.com. If you want to enter to win a signed Frank Beamer mini helmet, you got until the end of the month. So like 2 more weeks-ish.
Yeah,
somewhere
that sounds
in
right.
That vicinity.
Mm-hmm.
A few quick and easy and free steps that you need to follow to get your name in that hat. But as long as you do, we will pick that winner at the end of the month, Dan.
Any news bits you want to talk about? General Booty going to Oklahoma?
General Booty, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a name. That is a name.
Nephew of John David is where I think I saw.
Correct. That is correct.
Yeah. Jordan Addison touring, going on tour, taking a look. I think he posted a picture of eating some canes while in Austin. Seems like a fun time.
Yeah.
Unless you're a Pitt fan. Hail to Pitt, as always. No, I'm ready. If you're springing this upon me in mid-May, Ty, I've got my hammer. I've got my screws. I've got my mortar. I've got my grout. It's time to start building. Ty, is it not? We're already going to start construction on this season's bedding?
Stop that music. I've got one.
The ability to see the future and react
okay,
to it.
Okay, okay.
That is what I do. What I do. What I do. What I do. What I do.
What's going on?
Get some intensity up in here with a little two for the money. Friend of the show, Matthew McConaughey, the one, the
always.
So here's the deal. This is from FanDuel. FanDuel dropped early college football lines, as I said at the top. Week zero. Excuse me. That's
we
a
do
thing
have a
now.
Zero.
Week zero. They should just call it week one, but whatever. Week zero through week 13, 14 weeks of college football goodness. We've got a doc here that is 8 pages long. What you and I did is we took turns going on through, highlighting the games that were of interest to us, highlighting the ones that we liked, the ones that we were curious about. I don't know to what end you went through all of these lines and took a look just generally at the trends. Teams
yes.
that Vegas, in this case, FanDuel seemed to like. Teams that they maybe didn't like as much or surprise you how little they liked them. I pulled out a couple trends. Was there anything that jumped out to you?
The uncertainty around new teams and the variance therein, right? So there are Florida lines, there are USC lines and Oregon lines. Obviously, all of these teams are playing in major matchups that it's going to command attention. It's going to command dollars flowing into various sports books. So that's why they exist at this moment. So just seeing the variance of expectations despite the opponent, right? And like there's new coordinators, you know, Michigan has a new defensive and offensive coordinator. Like who knows anything about any of these teams, let alone what they're going to look like in week 12. And so the thing that stands out to me is some like kind of cartoonish looking numbers later on in the year. Obviously,
oh, yeah.
Notre Dame is another team that is going to command a lot of attention financially in the betting markets. So it's more of just the like idea that nobody knows anything about where these programs are going to be, and the seductive nature of placing a bet now on week 10 or week 14 or something wild like that. That to me is it. That like, man, even Texas is all over the place.
Oh,
like
yeah.
getting road favorites against good teams, but huge dogs at home against good. Like it's so fun to take a look at the literal spread, but also the spread of numbers involved with some of these programs. It's great.
I was looking at these lines when my wonderful wife, Kate, came downstairs mm-hmm. this morning, and I was fully plugged into this, leaning close to the monitor, looking at a spreadsheet on one side, looking at these lines on the other. And she looked at me and she said, "You're cooking up a little scheme over there, aren't you? What are you so into?"
Yeah.
I love this. To some extent, it happens every year. This is actually and maybe I've got hazy history, this is about as comprehensive a set of early lines as I can remember. I'm sure it's happened before, but at least since I've been paying attention to it, this is a meaty list here. And I'm really into it because I did this a little bit last year where I found some lines. It felt like they were off. And I decided I'm going to place some money. I'm going to see how I do. And I ended up doing very well on those. Now, I didn't really go all in because you're investing your money. You're locking up your money. If you're like me, you're not really eager to tie. You don't have a whole lot of money in there to begin with. You're not eager to tie up what you have on a long-term bet 4 months down the road. But I did it a couple times last year. I was really successful at doing it. And I'm fascinated on so many different levels. First off, what you said about new teams and new situations and coaches and coordinators and players is absolutely the case. So case in point, Florida. Florida falls into that category. Mm-hmm. To a lesser extent, you can say Iowa State. Notre Dame fall into that category. In all of those cases, you've got teams either with new coaches or with new starters at key positions that nobody's really had a chance to fully suss out at this point. We haven't even gotten to our previews, which we'll do at the end of July, but to make any kind of point spread based on the little information we have now is almost ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I tend to approach this as, are these lines going to increase as the game gets closer, or do I feel the line's going to go down? And if I find something that I think is particularly interesting, as I did here in week one, which I'll talk about, that's a game that I'm going to throw a few shekels down on. Even though it's mid-May, very early, if I feel like there's potential for a line to go hard one way or the other, I'm going to put some money down. So
yeah,
it definitely seemed as if there was a lot of uncertainty on Florida. And for that reason, I'll probably stay away. But there were other situations where it seems as if, in my opinion now, they were really overvaluing teams like Texas, teams like Texas A&M, USC.
Yep.
Ole Miss, to an extent, is interesting. Nebraska is very interesting, and I highlighted a few of their games as well.
Are they getting a lot of love or a lot of...
I think so. I think so.
Dismissals. Okay.
And then on the flip side, I do think that Wisconsin, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Michigan State, and Penn State are five teams right out of the chute that maybe Vegas, again, FanDuel in this case, doesn't have a great sense for where they're at, but definitely seemed a little less bullish on them than I would expect.
Yep.
So I mentioned Nebraska. Let's go into week zero.
By the way, all as always, all of these numbers, the intention of all of these numbers is to seduce. It's not Vegas saying Georgia's 16-ish points better than Oregon or Ohio State's 14-ish points better than Notre Dame. It's, ooh, that's rubbing me right where I am.
These lines will move. These are not set in stone by any stretch. The interest for me is in looking at a point spread and saying, is this going to move drastically in one direction or the other?
Yeah.
And if I think I've got a beat on that, then maybe let's throw some money down. But don't get in over your skis here. Because as you said, the product is to try and seduce. I mentioned Nebraska. Nebraska's a 9.5 point favorite. Week zero, the game's in Dublin.
Okay.
Against Northwestern.
Yeah.
Now look. Nebraska is one of those teams where I think they're boom or bust this year. It's either going to go real well and they're going to retain and re-up with Scott Frost, or it's really not and they're going to be looking for a new coach at the end of the year. Northwestern, we just talked about Northwestern a week ago and how it's unclear to both of us what they're doing to correct the situation they found themselves in a year ago. Doesn't feel like there has been any kind of uplifting offseason message that we can really hang our hat on. So I get the 9.5 points, but traveling across the Atlantic from the middle of the country, new players at positions, you've got a coach in Scott Frost who is trying to win to save his job. You've got a guy in Pat Fitzgerald who, look, typically plays defense, didn't do that all that well last year.
No.
9.5 in that spot feels like somebody really likes Nebraska. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're not wrong about it. I think it's more of a hedge against Northwestern and how little offense they at times are capable of putting onto the field. And so, yeah, I don't know if it's confidence in the Huskers. It promises for a strange game, although there's the time difference thing. There's the weird, like, players are just off because of that kind of travel. I'm sure they're traveling well in advance. But it does seem like as you go through this, that Nebraska is getting a certain degree of benefit based on, I guess, who they've added this year, the changes they made on the coaching staff, and the idea that, you know, there's a desperation to Scott Frost, that he's throwing the kitchen sink even more than usual, and last year's 3-9 was not indicative of the quality of this team.
The one that got me with Nebraska was whenever they play Oklahoma, maybe it's week 3, I don't know, I'm probably screwing that up.
Yep.
Oklahoma -4.5 on the road at Nebraska. Felt very low to me.
Yeah.
Very low to me. Maybe Oklahoma's being undervalued as well, I don't know, but that one to me really jumped out.
Do you have any teams, because this I think is the actual strategy in looking at lines this early, do you have any teams in your mind that are like clearly bounce back cases from where they were last year, or clearly a free falling type scenario? Because if you look at the teams who are especially successful against the spread in 2021, which again is just a single sample size year, whatever, the teams that did especially well against the spread bounced back from a bad 2020, and it was weird for everybody, and, you know, had a jump up against the spread, and Vegas didn't really adjust until later on in the season, or teams that had come into the season, aka Clemson, with, oh yeah, they're definitely going to win 10, 11, 12 regular season games comfortably, and it took some time to correct Vegas giving Clemson so much respect with those lines that eventually it sort of came to fruition when they started winning more and more games later on in the season, blowing out teams. But if there's that team in your mind, they're like, man, this team, in my mind, in May, is due to fall off a cliff, now is when you get in on it.
This is a Stockton Malone situation. I appreciate the alley-oop. This is where I was going to go next with this, because my week one, maybe lock of the year.
Okay.
Lock of the week.
Wow. Of the year, of the year. We've got Penn State -3 at Purdue. When I grabbed it, full disclosure, I did grab this when I saw it. It was Penn State -2.5 on the road at Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
So look, I get it. I understand that Purdue was a fan favorite last year because of how well they performed in some big games. I feel a lot of that was on the strength of George Karloftis, no longer there, now playing for the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And David Bell, their star wideout, who is also now moved on. That's not to say that Purdue has not done fairly well on the recruiting trail with Jeff Brohm. That's not to say that Purdue won't be a formidable opponent. But Penn State starts a veteran quarterback, presumably now healthy, in like his eighth year in state college. He will know that offense. He does have plenty of reinforcements out wide, even though Jahan Dotson has gone to the NFL. What with Parker Washington, Mitchell Tinsley, other guys that are now stepping into the fold. Nick Singleton, they've got plenty of ammo at the running back position as well. Sure. I feel like that line will get better. In addition to a defense that always is pretty stout, they did lose Brent Pry, but at the same time, there are reinforcements there as well. They've recruited pretty well. That is a make or break game for Penn State very early. Because if you lose that game on the road at Purdue in week one, there are more difficult games that are soon to follow, notably of which is that Auburn game, which I believe is, what, 2 weeks later?
Right.
Where they're on the road at Auburn. Yep. So I feel like there will be a sense of urgency. There needs to be a sense of urgency right out of the chute for Penn State. They're coming off a 7-6 overall season a year ago, and the schedule is not such that they can take that Purdue game off. I think they'll be focused in that game. I think they'll be prepared. And the fact that the line is only a field goal, that feels to me, case in point, like a spread that come closer, come kickoff, that pops to 5, that pops to 6. As more people see that number, it's going to continue to grow. It's already grown to 3 from 2.5. So I really like that game, which is why I put some of my own money down on it.
Remind me again, which of these quarterbacks is better and playing at home? Dayton O'Connell better than Sean Clifford and playing at home to open up the season? Yes. This is just a quick devil's advocate. I think Aiden O'Connell's better than Sean Clifford. Would you rather have Aiden O'Connell for Penn State than Sean Clifford? I kind of would. Secondly, James Franklin, Sean Clifford on the road against a decent opponent to open the season.
Are they decent last year? Are they decent?
Yeah, Purdue's decent.
They were decent last year. Will they be decent this year?
they win a bowl game last year? Yeah, yeah, they're decent.
Okay.
Just walk me through the first like seven drives against Wisconsin last year for Penn State. Really get your juices flowing to open up the season. I know they won that game because Wisconsin was a nightmare on offense for chunks of last year. I'm just saying, Penn State to open up the season on the road, they can come out of the chute fully flat.
They could. I don't think they will. I don't think they will. I think there will be an urgency there. Penn State's a really good bounce back candidate, even though lost some faces on defense and on offense.
Heard that last year, too.
I get it.
Yeah.
You highlighted Notre Dame at Ohio State. We had talked about this point spread a couple months back. Mm-hmm. The early line here is Notre Dame plus 13.5 on the road at Ohio State in week one. That's a big game. Yeah. That's going to be Marcus Freeman's first official, I guess, game as like head football coach or not interim coach in a bowl game situation like they had last season. This is his first big regular season week one showdown against his alma mater.
Yep.
In Ohio State. Ohio State, we did videos on Ohio State. Ohio State's loaded.
Yep.
They're loaded for bear. Which side of this bet do you like?
If I like Ohio State.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, the better quarterback is playing at home. Who would you rather have as a defensive coordinator right now, Jim Knowles or Al Golden? Had to look up the last time Al Golden called a defense, Ty. It predates the solid verbal. It's 2005 for your hoo-hoo-hoos. Not saying Notre Dame's going to be bad. I think they're going to be pretty good this year. But Tyler Buckner and Al Golden against C.J. Stroud and Jim Knowles. I'm just saying, if the game is going to get out of hand, it's pretty clear which direction it will go out of hand in. And so this is me zagging when the line says zig, saying, oh, that's such a big number. Notre Dame has guys on defense. They return X, Y, and Z on offense. Tommy Rees decided to come back. I'm just saying, first-time head coach on the road against probably a top-three team, a Heisman probably finalist, if not favorite, in C.J. Stroud, with arguably the best receiver in the country against a Notre Dame secondary that I think was fine last year but probably wasn't amazing. And lost its best player. I'm just not there right now, week one, with those kind of chips stacked up against the Irish.
Yeah, also, it should be noted, game against Oklahoma State, second half did not go well. So in terms of an audition for game management...
I don't care about that. I don't care about any of that. And even though, yes, Jim Knowles got to see Notre Dame and Tommy Rees in the second half and shut him down. Did he coach in that game?
He did.
I think he did, yeah. So it's just another interesting chess piece there. But yeah, I think the... The initial instinct for me was, that's too many points. Come on, it's Notre Dame. But then I started thinking about like that Michigan State game and like what Ohio State looks like, the, you know, the Rose Bowl against that really strong Utah team, even though they didn't blow them out. But what the fireworks that could be on display in week one. Oof, man, I think I'm going that way with the Bucs.
I don't think that line will come down. So I think I agree with you. I think if anything, it ends up closer to 17 by kickoff. So now would be an interesting time to get in on 13.5. The one game that I did want to mention quickly, and I want to try and get through as many of these as we can without doing an hour and a half show. Utah at Florida to open up the season is a really interesting matchup on 1,000 different levels. Point spread right now, Florida minus 1.5 points. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those lines where I mentioned it on our Discord server, verballers.com, for those interested. And there was a little bit of dispute back and forth. Dispute's probably putting it too harshly, but some conversation around how do we feel about any of these teams. Utah, definitely much more of a known quantity at this point. Florida, as I mentioned at the top, remains a great unknown for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is new coach, new quarterback, new everything.
Well, new full-time starting quarterback.
Full-time starting
Anthony
quarterback.
Richardson did play a good amount. Yeah,
absolutely. But it stands to reason that Florida's got talent. It just needs to do a better job of organizing it. Billy Napier, as I pointed out time and again, he got his teams up to play at Louisiana. They were always up for a fight. They always fought the better teams on their schedule really tough.
Right.
So week one, Utah coming to town. You got to picture this from Utah's standpoint. Utah beats an SEC team on the road to open up the season. They're suddenly in that national conversation, whether it's Florida and Florida goes 8-4 or not, that's still a tough place to play.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this game? Should Florida be favored?
Yes.
Why?
It's difficult to go on the road against an at least pretty good team. I don't know what, I mean, games Florida is going to win. I'm not confident that much about Florida, but The idea of Florida in a as a dog in this game at home to open up the season in front of that kind of crowd, that sort of home field advantage, the heat that will be the literal heat coming down from the sky in Gainesville in whatever it is, late August, early September. I think we're dealing with reverse altitude here. That if you're a Utah player,
I do not have that sound.
I know you don't. That's okay. I think we're coming down. I think this is like the Alto's adventure. Just skiing down the mountain to see what there is to find in Gainesville. I like the idea of going with the mystery with a very strong quarterback potentially at home. And again, week one or week zero or whatever, you can throw out most of what happens. The most change happens between week one and week two. And so there is that element of mystery about Florida. I think Utah has the more dependable and better quarterback. I think their younger defense is more interesting. Long term over the course of the season, I'm higher on Utah than I am Florida. But in Gainesville, without any tape on this Gator team, I like Florida here.
I like how the register went up for you. That was good.
Yeah.
All right, quick here. I'll just rattle these off. TCU minus 9.5 at Colorado. Your Oregon Ducks, 16.5-point dog. Neutral cider, quote unquote, neutral cider against Georgia. Yep. LSU favored by 4.5 in that opening kick game that they play in New Orleans over Florida State. Clemson by about 3 touchdowns over Georgia Tech. They play that one in Atlanta.
Yep.
And BYU favored by 2.5 in the Jeff Grimes Bowl part deux against Baylor. Okay. Week two, each of us highlighted a game and we talked about Florida a moment ago. I am very curious about Kentucky at Florida. This is another one of those lines that I saw and I didn't really know what to make of.
Yeah.
We got folks out there. We talked to one of them, our new friend Nate Tice, who's all in on Will Levis.
Correct.
A lot of good vibes coming from that Kentucky football program after last season.
Mm-hmm.
Florida favored by 4 at home week 2 against Kentucky.
Yep. I kind of like Kentucky there.
That's why I highlighted it.
It's kind of body blowish right away after getting Utah and start, you know, the excitement of starting the Billy Napier era and then the reality of playing Kentucky. And now I look, the other caveat here is neither one of us has done a deep dive on these teams in preparation for the season, and things change during fall camp, be it injuries, transfers, whatever. But right now, situationally, unless Florida shows something crazy on defense that at this point would be unexpected. And there's talent. But I like Kentucky there a little bit.
I do too. I highlighted it in blue, which is my color, my assigned color for the games that I'm curious about.
Yep.
Kentucky plus 4 there is interesting to me. I think that line will come down too.
Yep.
I think that line will come down. So if that's something of interest to you, of course, we're not going to put our professional reputation at this point on any of these bets outside of the Penn State Purdue one, which I feel very confident about.
Okay.
But just it's a curiosity for me.
Kentucky starts the season with Miami of Ohio.
Yeah.
By the way, the week prior. Okay.
Also to the point of body blow, also to the point of letdown / look ahead. I don't know the exact circumstance, but Pitt at home week 2. Getting 4 points against Tennessee. This is a week after the backyard brawl, which they play in week 0.
The USC backyard brawl, right? JT Daniels against Keaton Slovis?
That's right. Or no, 2 weeks.
Presumably.
They play in week 0.
Week 0, a couple weeks after the backyard brawl, yeah.
So to get ready for Tennessee minus 4 on the road at Pitt. I'm not a huge proponent of road favorites, you know that. I love Tennessee in that matchup because Pitt at that point, right, they've got Keaton Slovis.
Sure.
I think Pitt's okay, despite the fact that Jordan Addison has garnered a lot of the headlines here via the transfer portal and NIL and all that. They do have other dudes that I think they can get the ball to. I just don't know a whole lot about Pitt. And I know an awful lot about Tennessee, and I feel great about Tennessee. So I highlighted that one. Tennessee minus 4, I think, could be interesting.
By the way, the Tennessee team that lost, maybe asterisk, to your downtrodden Purdue Boilermakers in the bowl game.
That's also true.
Yeah.
That's also true.
It doesn't have an asterisk. They won that game. This game doesn't excite me a terrible amount. I think I'm more down on Pitt if you're taking away Whipple, Pickett, and Addison.
That was my thought too. That was my thought.
The firepower on offense, there's just a lot to be replaced. And I know there's still guys there. Tennessee went 5-8 against the spread last year. So as fun as they weren't especially dependable in a positive direction Vegas-wise. Vegas didn't have a real good handle on Tennessee. So I'm just sort of inclined, if not stay away, take the home dog there.
See, this is why I disagree. Because
okay.
If you're going to beat Tennessee, you got to score how many points? 35? They're going to score points. Tennessee's going to score points this year.
Sure.
They might not play a whole lot of defense. Who knows?
Yeah.
But you're going to have to score 30, 35 points in order to beat them.
Okay.
I'm not confident Pitt can do that.
That's fine.
I don't know enough about Pitt. And so if you're beating Tennessee, you're probably beating them a score sort of like last year, which was like 41-34 or something in that realm. And it was a lot on the arm of Kenny Pickett. I just don't know on whom we can rely on the Pitt side right now. So I like Tennessee there. If I'm looking ahead, some of the other lines here that I thought, you know, we'll just call them out. Wazoo yep. at Wisconsin. Wisconsin favored by 14.5. USC minus 11.5 on the road at Stanford. Alabama minus 15 at Texas. Maybe this is one of those Texas spots that you referenced earlier.
Yep.
We've got Iowa minus 6. At home against Iowa State. And we've got Notre Dame on the heels of that 13.5 point dog line.
Yeah.
Now a 17.5 point favorite at home against Cal.
That's interesting to me. I mean, the fact
Cal.
That it's at home is nice.
I would take Cal.
Justin Wilcox, Cal teams started out, I think, 9-0 in non-conference play. So they start well. Obviously, they don't have the depth nor the firepower to make it happen over the course of a Pac-12 season. But Justin Wilcox against a green quarterback
yeah.
in what we believe to be Tyler Buchner is at least intriguing from a confusion and turnover standpoint. That Justin Wilcox, now with Peter Sermon as his defensive coordinator, have that reputation of just making quarterbacks think an extra second and a half longer than they
just
should.
A little bit, yeah.
Just, it's interesting. It's the whole seeing ghosts thing, Ty. That's it.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Week 3, you highlighted Penn State minus 1 on the road at Auburn.
Yeah.
Why'd you highlight
Again, I'm not as high on Penn State as you are. And even though Auburn has its own host of issues from the top on down, Auburn's a tough place to play. And if Auburn is not especially deep on offense, skill position wise, even though Tank Bigsby did decide to return, and that the defensive talent level across the board has fallen off, I just don't know what I've seen in terms of benefit of the doubt to say, no, Penn State should be favored against Auburn. I don't know. I think it's just going to be an ugly game. So I'll take a home dog happily.
It's only 1 point though.
I know. I hear you. I totally hear you.
Yeah. I get the confusion there. That's one of those lines where I'd stay away from.
Okay.
So I, I'm not betting most of these games. I'm definitely not betting that one.
Yeah.
Just too many variables.
Are there any teams that have come up a bunch where you're like, I am in on who they are and the lines cannot be high enough, or I am in on the huge bounce back potential, or I am in on fading so-and-so state, so-and-so tech, anybody? Like, is there somebody where you're just like, I'm already planting the flag now, and you can say, Ty told me way back when?
I think Oklahoma is an interesting answer there. And it's not necessarily because of any step back, but it's mostly because of perception. Oklahoma lost a lot. Lincoln Riley, right? Their quarterback, wide receivers, guys transferred out. But they did do a pretty good job replenishing, not just with bringing over Brent Venables from Clemson, but also Dylan Gabriel. Like, they've got guys that I think will perform admirably. To see them only a 4.5-point favorite on the road at Nebraska, somebody can clip this and play it back to me later after I'm proven wrong. Go for it.
Right.
Just seems to me like they're being undervalued. And so as I went through, that was one trend that kept popping up. Like, I would expect Oklahoma to be favored a little bit more than this. So I think I'm planting my flag there. And there are some other teams that we can talk about, but I don't think any quite rise to the extent of Oklahoma, which really, really had some eyebrow-raising lines here. That, by the way, week three is Oklahoma, -4.5 on the road at Nebraska. Two other lines this week that are of interest to me. West Virginia, -2.5 at Virginia Tech. I think West Virginia could be a team that takes a step forward. We talked a lot about them a couple weeks back, a couple months back, where we just weren't sure which direction the program's headed. But with JT Daniels perhaps being a more capable option at quarterback, and with Virginia Tech being in a spot where I think they'll get better, but they're doing this thing, and, you know, we talked about this too. They're moving guys around on defense. They're not sure where the right positions are for people. This is really a year zero type of situation for Brent Pry. I'm not sure what version of Virginia Tech we're going to get. So West Virginia -2.5 is interesting to me. I don't think interesting enough that I put money on it, but that's a notable matchup that I'm curious about. The one that I'm most curious about, though, in week three is Miami on the road at Texas A&M.
Okay.
This one is interesting to me because despite all the good vibes around Texas A&M and the recruiting just haul that they brought in, historic recruiting haul, it sometimes takes a while to organize those pieces. And you got to believe if you are Mario Cristobal and the Miami Hurricanes, a game like this against Texas A&M is one that you're going to have circled on the calendar for months to come.
Right.
They will be ready for this game. And I think Cristobal knows well enough from his own time in the SEC that this is a game where they need to show out. This is a game where they need to show out. So I think they'll be ready for it. I think they'll be prepared. And I do think on the A&M side, even though I'm pretty high on the Aggies, it will take some time to assemble the pieces. I'm not saying they lose this game. I think they'll beat Miami. But right now, the line I see is they're favored by 9. The reason I wouldn't bet on it yet is because I think it's got potential to go up higher. I think eventually, as this thing gets closer to kickoff, that could end up over 10. And I will probably jump on Miami in that case, because it just feels like a situation to me where Miami feels like they've got nothing to lose. They need to show out well. They need to perform. They've got a good quarterback. And perhaps
who's
they have
throwing to.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Doesn't have an Evan Stewart on his side, but I just feel like that's a situation where maybe your boy Mario plays some gorilla ball and keeps the score down and keeps it close and tries to win with defense.
Ty, I think you're the best. I really do. I'm fading Ty so much this year. Holy hell, you're in on West Virginia bouncing back? You're in on, like, the minds that brought you a woefully disappointing USC offense these past 3 years are coming to Morgantown. That's what you're in on? Graham Harrell and JT Daniels with no receiving talent? Okay.
I'm in on it.
Okay.
But because who's stopping that talent at Virginia Tech?
I mean, Brent Pry? I don't know. At least there's something new and interesting about the Virginia Tech defense, hypothetically.
If it were 7, I'd say no way. If it were 7, I'd say no way. But 3? Can they beat them, Virginia Tech, who doesn't know who's playing anywhere, by 3? Yeah, they can beat him there.
Okay. Sure. It's a tough state place to play, and you're dealing with mystery a little bit. I mean, you'll have 2 weeks of tape or whatever. It's, what, you said week 3, right?
Week 3.
Miami? Miami Mario, big game Mario, last seen against Utah, losing like 77-13. I think they're going to become a very talented team, and I think they're going to win a good chunk of games, and they'll be a threat at least to win the division more often than not under Mario Cristobal. I think they're trending in the right place. Right now? Against Texas? Where, that game's not in Miami, is it?
The Texas A&M.
So you have first-year Mario against a team with offensive line issues going up against what was a top 7, 12 defense nationally in
Correct.
Texas A&M
Very
that's
good.
Only getting deeper, younger, faster, and is more secure at quarterback, whoever ends up being the starting quarterback. It's not going to be Zach Calzada, as we know. Has interesting skill talent, though the game-changing receiver and whoever that is yet to be seen. I think A&M's in a much better spot. That I'm not even saying A&M's going to cover this game, but to be in on Miami this early on?
I'm not in on Miami. I'm saying,
well,
said, here's what I'm
you
saying.
You were saying that there's a scratch and claw element that Mario's going to play gorilla ball with a bad offensive line? Is that a thing that you want to see?
Here's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I will reiterate what I said already.
Okay.
I'm not saying A&M loses this game. I'm also not saying to bet this game now. I'm saying
okay.
I look at that point spread's going to go up. And as it gets closer,
all right,
as we get to our week 3 preview at some point in mid-December, if it stands as is, I will likely take Miami in those points.
Okay. I just want to serve as the fire hose sometimes to cool you off as you get all hot and bothered about Miami on the road in College Station in West Virginia at Lane Stadium. You're like these gigantic loud places to play. You're like, I'm feeling good about
Graham. Is there a look-ahead element for A&M? Because in week 4, they've got Arkansas in the neutral site Arlington
no,
game.
No.
No?
They'll take Miami very seriously. Yeah.
All right. Some other lines here very quickly in week 3. Michigan State -3 on the road at Washington. Oregon favored by 6.5.
Yep.
At home against BYU. Ole Miss favored by 10 at Georgia Tech. Tough year for Georgia Tech. A lot of tough games here. They're a frequent visitor to this early lines list, if only because they play so many big games. But, okay.
I by the way, early on, I would not bet Oregon with if you handed me a $100 bill. Either way, I would not bet for or against the Bo Nix has played Georgia, right? If Bo Nix, the presumed starter, starts in that game in Atlanta and start, you know, BYU and whoever else, this is the most talented, arguably the most talented Oregon team, just in terms of like 24/7 composite ranking the depth. You know, you have a Dan Lanning taking over with Tosh on the defense and Matt Paul. Like, there's all sorts of reasons to be very up on Oregon. Returning the offensive line, the receiver room is very deep. You know, they've done a lot of work on the defensive line in the portal, but still. The wild card of like Bo Nix can throw you in or out of a game at any given time. Mm-mm. Not me. Not my money.
All right. Fair enough.
Not your money either. Okay.
Not my money either. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's combine weeks 4 and 5 together here and keep this show moving. We've got another A&M game, which I just referenced. A&M favored by 7.5 in that neutral site game in Arlington against Arkansas. Clemson favored by 10 on the road at Wake, and then the following week in week 5 favored by 10 at home against NC State. We've got Michigan -4 at Iowa. We've got Alabama -17 in week 5 against Arkansas, which is an interesting line.
Yep.
And then we've got 3 games that you and I highlighted. In week 4, you highlighted Wisconsin at Ohio State with the Buckeyes favored by 16.
Mm-hmm.
In week 5, you highlighted Utah -3. At UCLA. I think I also may have highlighted that one.
Yeah.
And then we've got West Virginia at Texas -13.5. Why don't we start with that West Virginia-Texas game since you like to dunk on the Mountaineers. Are you going Texas?
Sure.
Is that why you highlighted it?
I think so. Yeah. And I don't love it, but I think they're due for a randomly excellent game. And because I'm just not especially in on West Virginia, that's the game that's interesting to me, that they'll be randomly great one week and they'll pour it on. West Virginia's defense last year, I mean, I have it up in front of me right now. It was essentially average, and you can throw the ball on them, and that's all Texas is basically, even despite having Bijan Robinson, who I think will be a threat in the pass game. That's what Texas should be able to do successfully this year as they strengthen their offensive line. I'm still not all that in on Texas at the moment in May, but just less so on West Virginia. I just don't see a way in which West Virginia is anything more than a 500 team this year. And so on the road, with the distance between the Texas and Alabama game, yeah, I think Texas will randomly have an outburst, even though I think they lost that game last year, right?
Yeah.
Texas did lose to the Ears. I think I'm in. I'm in on a randomly excellent week for Texas in that spot.
I highlighted the Utah-UCLA game. It's at UCLA.
Ooh, big, scary 12,000 people.
I know, right? Utah minus -3.
Yeah.
What am I not understanding here? Because Utah was loaded on offense last year. After Cam Rising got in there and got comfortable, they were really good. Scored a ton of points on offense.
Mm-hmm.
UCLA's defense was dreadful. They were dreadful. They were a half team a year ago. Is Utah only 3 points better than UCLA in your view? Even if the game is not at Utah, three points feels real light to me.
Yeah, that's almost a game that I would go UCLA because the line seems so screwy. It's a tricky part of Utah's schedule. If you're going to look at the context of things, I think Oregon State is going to be, again, they're going to be frisky to me, because of their ability to run the ball. And they have ASU the week before that, San Diego State the week before that. It's also a look-ahead spot with SC, right? Mm. So you're going to have the Lincoln Riley against, right? Utah has SC the next week.
I didn't see that. Am
I not mistaken that that's the biggest game on Utah's home schedule?
I would assume so. I can't imagine anyone that's bigger.
Yeah, Oregon's on the road. Oregon's at Autzen November 18th. So there's that look-ahead spot where the team that's getting all of the attention in the South.
Never mind. Strike that from the record. I get it. We'll stay away from that one.
I'm just saying we could have an undefeated Utah team in that spot, right? They've gone to Florida and won this game.
Yeah.
Definitely within the realm of reason. And then the whispers are like, I don't know, game day might come to Salt Lake City if they're undefeated against a USC team. And then they lose to UCLA at home in the Rose Bowl. I think there's something interesting situationally about that.
Well, definitely don't bet it then. Don't bet it because that line probably jumps then. If that's the narrative, true. if we want to anchor ourselves to that possibility,
mm-hmm.
that line pops. That line's not three at kickoff.
Right.
Goes up, man. Keep your eyes on UCLA in that matchup because of the look ahead potential. The other one I wanted to call out briefly is Wisconsin at Ohio State. This is actually back in week four. I know we're jumping around a little bit here.
Yeah.
Ohio State favored by 16 points. This is a recurring trend with Wisconsin. I mentioned that earlier. Wisconsin feels like they're not getting enough love. I kind of get it. I obviously get it to see that Ohio State's favored by a healthy margin against pretty much any team on the schedule.
Right.
They're going to be loaded.
Yep.
They're absolutely going to be loaded. And Wisconsin, look, questions on offense. Questions on offense persist. Graham Mertz has never again lived up to what he did the very first game that he played against Illinois. It's just, we haven't seen that version of him all that frequently. You got to like the running game. You always like the running game at Wisconsin. But the question is, do they have enough firepower to hang with Ohio State? Will they be good enough on defense to tame that offense and keep this one within that margin?
Right.
I don't think I'd want to bet that line, but I think it's worth calling out that it's 16 and probably going up before kickoff.
Yeah, I don't know what you're getting from this Wisconsin offense. Every year it's the same thing in the offseason. We're like, okay, so we know that they need a receiver. And this guy is a converted javelin thrower. Hear me out. And it's always some deep sleeper who's going to emerge as like the big play threat on the outside. You know, occasionally it happens. You know, Quintez Cephas was very good. But that's the concern to me. It's the same line of thinking that you have about Tennessee and Pitt. We're like, how many points do you need to score to beat Ohio State? And how is Wisconsin scoring more than 17? Like, that's the issue when you look at this game, especially as I think we both agree that Ohio State's defense is going to be considerably improved. That, like, we've seen the Graham Mertz show.
Yeah.
What is different this year? There's a potentially new back who's going to pop full time in Braylon Allen. Okay. What's different? And that's why I'm not as high on Penn State as you are, where 2 years ago, Penn State fans were all amongst themselves saying, Sean Clifford shouldn't be back, should he? And then he played another season, and now he's about to play another season, and he's still Sean Clifford.
I said like, before, he's so old, he's got his own business now.
Right. I just like Ohio State. I just do.
Yeah. All right. Let's move over to week six and week seven. In week six, we've got the Red River Shootout, basically a pick'em between Texas and Oklahoma.
Yep.
Notre Dame minus 7.5 against BYU. They play that one in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Also in week six, two games that we highlighted, the A&M Bama game. Bama right now favored by 16. We can talk about that in more detail. And then the aforementioned USC against Utah. USC right now favored by 1 per this early line against Utah. And quickly in week seven, we also have the LSU Florida matchup, which is interesting. That's interesting, if nothing more. Florida right now favored by a field goal. We got Penn State and Michigan. Michigan favored by about a touchdown. Stanford, Notre Dame. Notre Dame a healthy favorite there. And then another one with Texas favored by 1 point on the road at Oklahoma State, and another Bama game where they're favored by 16.5 against Tennessee. So one of the trends here that you saw this past season that you're going to see, I think, again, if these lines are any indication, you see a definite trend where Alabama and Georgia and maybe this year Ohio State, pretty much every game favored by at least 17 points. That's just sort of the way it goes down. Mm-hmm. But let's go back. Let's talk about that Bama-Texas A&M game.
Sure.
A&M last year, the Calzada Armada knocked off Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue on the power, as we have, the power of that win alone. Zach Calzada secures a move over to Auburn. He's going to be the presumed starting quarterback there. Now, look, I don't think he's all that good. Okay?
Is he, though? I don't even know if he's going to win that job, but continue. Yeah,
I don't know. I don't think he's all that good. I'm going to presume at this point that you know, Calzada might be the guy for Auburn, right? But so A&M's coming at this from a different perspective. They're going to have a new quarterback. And presumably that's Max Johnson, who comes over from LSU. A lot of good steam, a lot of good vibrations on Texas A&M right now. But they do have to go to Tuscaloosa. They do have to knock off the Crimson Tide.
Yeah.
16 points is a lot. Alabama's not without their own questions. But, I mean, would you go A&M here based on this high of a number?
No.
Knowing the talent that is coming to College Station?
No, I don't think. I mean, look, it's what'd you say it was about 16 points?
16, yeah.
But it's in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
First of all, you mentioned Max Johnson. I don't love Max Johnson. I don't know that he's the presumed starter. Haynes King was named the starter last year. Jimbo liked him enough last year to have him lead the way. I assume Max Johnson's at least going to get time early on in the season, and this could be a time where, because what, A&M before this point has both Arkansas and Miami, so it's like, Max Johnson's a starter, but Haynes King's going to see some time, kind of thing.
Yeah, we've got a Haynes King package, right?
Right, and so this is when you have to start thinking of the different possibilities at quarterback, because Texas A&M is going to be a successful team this year, but if you're saying Alabama minus 16, you're talking about the firepower coming in of Jermaine Burton and Jahmyr Gibbs working out, which we have no reason to presume it won't. The offensive line should still be good. The defense should still be excellent. And the question remains, if you're talking 16 points, so you're saying how does A&M keep it within 14? There has to be some firepower emerging. We know about, you know, Anaya Smith. We know about guys on this team that are good, but it's that deep threat to sort of scare Alabama into playing more conservatively on defense. I wouldn't touch this game.
No.
I wouldn't touch this game with how quickly Alabama can and will score. And now that they have, I don't think Jahmyr Gibbs is all that different or better to me. I just think he's excellent than some, you know, like Najee Harris was excellent. He was an all-purpose. He was ridiculous. I just think the home run threat at this point is going to scare more teams into keeping eyes on the Alabama backfield than they have with some other guys recently. So no, this line feels about right. It doesn't push me in any direction.
One thing that we see here on back-to-back weeks, we've got Texas against the state of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Week six, Red River Shootout, Texas favored by 1, basically a pick 'em. Week seven on the road in Stillwater against Oklahoma State, Texas also favored by 1. You highlighted that game.
Yeah.
You're interested
in that game.
I love the pokes
here.
Do you?
Yeah. Well, here's why. So if Texas is great. If Texas and Quinn Ewers is everything, or I don't know if it's Hudson Card, whoever it is, but if the Texas offense continues to step forward, who's your guy that you like? Isaiah Nair. If he provides to be, if he provides that second option next to Xavier Worthy, if Bijan Robinson is healthy and pops, I think Texas loses this game, right? It's just a difficult to go to Boone Pickens, and presumably it's going to be a night game if Texas is excellent in this kind of headline matchup. I think that's where an excellent Texas team will go to die. And if Oklahoma State is really good and Texas is sort of up and down, you're getting Oklahoma State as a home dog here. And granted, they lose whatever it is, 7 full-time starters from last year's defense. That was all everything. I don't love Spencer Sanders, but I think he can be randomly excellent for a half.
He can be
like,
randomly
we've
excellent.
Seen that.
Yeah.
So I like the either or of Texas being really good or Texas being merely okay and Stillwater being a very difficult place to win a game as a road favorite.
The only other game here between these 2 weeks that I highlighted was the USC-Utah game. We talked a little bit about this.
Yeah.
I have USC down in my on my list of teams being overvalued.
Sure.
And, you know, it may not necessarily be because Vegas or the fine folks at FanDuel that made these lines. It could just be because they feel they need to protect themselves a little bit.
Yep.
USC is going to be a heavily bet team this coming season. They're going to be a heavily bet team this season because of all the offseason news stories. So generally, you will see that influence the lines one way or the other. And this could be one of those circumstances where they're favored, even though Utah might be the better team. Utah was the better team a year ago. It could just be because there's been a lot of activity in the USC direction. I don't know, but that's, you know, I'm not picking that at this stage of the game. I'm just saying that's something to keep your eyes on.
I think the potential of Caleb Williams is sky high, but I think the potential of Caleb Williams offering up random turd weeks also exists like it did last year. Granted, just a freshman, but man, to go to altitude, Rice Eccles, maybe it's too personal for me after seeing the Utes just demolish
and dismantle.
You're too close to it, Dan. I'm too close.
Yeah.
My beloved Oregon Ducks, limb from limb. But that place gets electric for some of these games.
Wow.
And I just think there's a chip on Utah's shoulder with the entire offseason being about USC in that division and not the defending champ. I don't see it. So I love Utah here in this spot.
All right. Week 8, week 9, let's go through these quickly.
Let's.
LSU favored by 3 over Ole Miss. Okay. Minnesota, 9-point dog on the road at Penn State. Okay. Ohio State, 3 scores over Iowa. Okay.
Yep.
As we get into week 9, I think we've got a little bit more intrigue in some of these matchups. One that you highlighted that I do want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But elsewhere, Texas A&M favored by 9 over Florida again. I don't think they have a good sense for Florida.
Yep.
North Carolina favored over Pitt. Michigan by 10 over Michigan State. Okay. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Georgia 17 over Florida.
Yep.
I think maybe they got some of their Florida games here mixed up and I'm mislabeling what weeks they occur in. But nonetheless, there is a Florida-Georgia game in week 9.
By the way, Georgia, an amazing team to plant a flag against, to fade. Not winning games. I think they're going to win a bunch of games. But judging by the number of guys drafted off of this defense and losing the running backs and losing Jermaine Burton, I love the tight end room. I love that Stetson Bennett is back. But it feels more like, oh, they won 28-17. They didn't win 34-7 kind of year. That they're going to take a step back in terms of the dominance factor. And so that, I think, is going to be reflective in these lines. So, yes, fade Bo Nix by all by all account. Fade, that's fine. I get that. But in some of these matchups, especially later on in the year, I think you could get good value now if you feel like Georgia is merely going to be very, very good and not all everything.
So the Florida A&M game is actually in week 10. That was misled.
Okay.
But you highlighted Ohio State minus 13 at Penn State.
Yeah.
My hunch is, based on what you said earlier about Ohio State and Penn State, that you're all in on the Buckeyes here.
Nope.
Really?
The same reason why I think that going up against Texas for Oklahoma State is a nice play situationally. Penn State has always, and look, it's various defensive and offensive coordinators, and I like Manny Diaz, and I like the creativity and whatever. I just think it's going to be closer than that. I think it's just, it's going to be a whiteout game, we assume, week nine, even if Penn State's 7-2, 6-3, or I guess that's not going to happen going into week nine, but, you know, even if they're a 1-2 loss team, I think they're going to field a very good defense. I think the electricity of that crowd, it was arguably, I think Penn State will be improved this year. And this was not an especially good Penn State team last year, especially at closing out close-ish games. And they still kept it pretty close against Ohio State last year. So I just think it's, I think situationally, to be a double-digit dog at home in a whiteout, I think it's too much.
That line probably goes down as the game gets closer.
Yeah.
So you see it at 13 if you like Penn State. This could be an interesting time to jump in on that.
Now, if you told me that I could bet on the potential of Penn State being up 3 in the third quarter and losing by 10 to 12.
You can bet that. You can do an in-game bet.
I would jump all over that live. Yeah.
You can do a live in-game.
No, I'm saying very specifically now, if you gave me like plus odds that Penn State would blow a second half lead to Ohio State, I would take it. Yeah.
All right. Let's move quickly through weeks 10, 11, 12, and 13.
Let's.
Week 10. You highlighted Clemson minus 3 at Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. You like Clemson here, don't you?
I do.
Yeah. Yeah. You also highlighted Colorado at USC. USC favored by 21.
I think Notre Dame has a really interesting, especially given maybe it's just the karmic offseason of saying like, oh, Marcus Freeman, it's a new era, bringing that youth, bringing that energy. Notre Dame's going to pull players that are going to put them over the top. I think we might have a moment collectively as a college football universe where we're going to have to say, so it turns out Brian Kelly was a really good coach. And as much as you're gritting your teeth as I say that, because of the manner in which he left and the way in which Notre Dame hit their ceiling, it seemed at times, I think it's very a good amount of potential where we're like, oh, so replacing a proven long-term 10-plus win coach with a first-year guy who's 34 or whatever, it's going to take some time. He's going to take some lumps. And it turns out Brian Kelly was pretty good at coaching college football. I think there's high potential for that. And so when I see a line like this with where I expect Clemson's defense to be,
yeah,
I'm okay with it. I'm okay with riding with the and look, there's gonna be a lot of emotion in this game. A lot of the same reasons why I'm going with home dogs other places. I just think situationally Notre Dame, there might be that moment where Notre Dame fans, either out loud or within their own head or within their cribbage groups or whatever, are gonna say, "Turns out Brian Kelly was pretty good."
I mean, there's a lot of potential on this list for Clemson.
Yeah.
If you are a Clemson believer, you've got options here.
Sure. Right.
You've got options in week one, favored by 3 touchdowns against Georgia Tech. Neither you nor I like Georgia Tech all that much. You've also got options on back-to-back weeks in 4 and 5 where they're favored by 10 on the road at Wake.
Yeah.
Or NC State, I guess, is more of a revenge spot at home, favored by 10. Like, there are situations here, if you are a Clemson believer, where you could potentially lock in on a better line now than come kickoff. And I think this Clemson Notre Dame game is probably a very good example of that.
It depends how good Cade Klubnik is going to be, right?
We're in the club level here.
You've planted the flag. I get that.
I'm ready. So I kind of like that pick as well. Clemson minus 3. I wouldn't want to go Notre Dame. I also feel like there are, again, I keep saying good vibes, and I mean that, around Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman and new era, new blood running the program. Like, it's all very exciting. There are a lot of questions, though. Not sure. The least of which is, what are we getting with Tyler Buchner? Because we saw him run a couple times last year, and that was fun. But we didn't get to see a whole lot of him to really have any idea for what to expect this coming season. It's going to be his team. It's not going to be Drew Pine. It's going to be Tyler Buchner, provided he's healthy. And we just, I don't know what to expect. Everybody likes what they saw from him in the spring, but it's a great unknown.
Okay.
I highlighted Florida State against Miami here.
Okay.
I'm inclined to go FSU. FSU getting 9.5 points. Florida State's going to be a team that haunts me all season long because I can't make up my mind how I feel about them. Let's be clear. On a podcast, a week ago, I said, they got to do better than Jordan Travis. But then everybody's telling me, the numbers on Jordan Travis aren't, they're not bad. Maybe you should pay more attention to the numbers on Jordan Travis. And so then I talk myself into that corner. I look at his advanced numbers, and you're right. The numbers aren't bad. And so I stand firmly on this pedestal of, I have no idea what to expect out of Jordan Travis in Florida State. I hope they're better this coming season than they were a year ago, and they started out 0-4. And clearly this game against Miami is going to be a pretty big deal. Not just because it's Miami and it's a traditional rival, but also because there's, I think, a lot of recruiting hay to be made on this matchup now.
Of course. I mean, there always is.
There always is, but it's at such a pivotal time for both of these programs, especially come week 10 of the season.
Yeah.
Miami, 9.5 points the favorite at home. I feel like this one's close. This is usually a close game, or at least has been historically. So I would go Florida State plus the points.
Yeah, we don't know how many recruits will be on hand to choose an HBCU over Florida State this year for a matchup this big. We don't even know. We don't know that number. The other issue with Jordan Travis is just availability. Randomly, I don't, you know, is he going to miss 2-3 games this year? He just gets beat up. He takes hits, especially behind that line, especially the athletic brand of football that he plays. It's a revenge spot. I don't know. There's a lot going on in this game. So, yeah, this one didn't really interest me because I think this has wide swings coming in terms of this number. Otherwise, by the way, I mentioned USC Colorado. I think USC might just blow the doors off Colorado, and I don't think it matters how good USC's defense is in this game. I think Colorado's going to be that bad.
Track me. All right.
They just got – so Colorado got pilfered. They had good players on defense who, like, basically all left. Like, there's just – it's fallen apart quickly in Boulder.
All right. Florida at A&M. A&M favored by 9. We've got Bama by 16. Wow. On the road at LSU. That could be one to keep your eyes on.
Sure.
That line I could see coming down. So if you like LSU, which I would not advise anyone liking LSU in that matchup, but if you like them, I could see that line maybe getting a little bit tighter around kickoff time.
I like the D coordinator that Brian Kelly hired. I think away from the Chiefs, but he was with Mark Stoops in Kentucky before that. Yeah, I like him.
If LSU looks strong through the first couple weeks of the year, you could see a future in which that line comes down a little bit lower.
Sure.
Georgia favored by 17 over Tennessee. Surprise, surprise. 17's magic number. Let's go to week 11.
Yep.
Oregon by 9 over Washington. Michigan 11.5 over Nebraska. Arkansas favored by a field goal over LSU. Oklahoma favored by 5.5 in the Bedlam game. The two that we highlighted here were Wisconsin -2 at Iowa, and Utah -14 against Stanford. I think you highlighted the Utah game. What do you like there?
Utah? Okay. I like Utah a good amount.
So no bounce back for Stanford this year.
I think Tanner McKee is pretty good, but I just think the defense has next to nothing. And in terms of firepower, I don't really like Stanford's talent there. So you got to score points. And going to altitude, going against the defending champ, I like the Utes. And by the way, I think I love Wisconsin in that game against Iowa.
Oh, yeah. That's why I highlighted it.
I think I do, too.
Here's the rationale behind it. Wisconsin favored by 2 on the road at Iowa. There are games that are decided by 1 point. There are games that are decided by 2. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I feel like more are decided by 3 or more. Could just be bad logic. But whenever I see 2 points, it's like, well, why not 3? Close enough. My sense is that if you like Wisconsin to win that game, you should just take Wisconsin because the line is so low. Right. I don't know what to expect out of Iowa's offense. Brian Ferentz now getting more control. Okay, great. I don't like that situation. I still like Wisconsin's defense. I still like their running game. It might be ugly, but if I like Wisconsin to win, then in theory, I should like them -2, and I think I do.
Yeah, also the teams, the good teams, if we assume Wisconsin's going to be good, perhaps not great, the good teams that go to Iowa or that try to challenge Iowa and end up losing or losing demonstrably are the ones that are looking to challenge them downfield, which I don't think that, I mean, that's just not what Wisconsin's, I don't, look, maybe Bobby Engram is going to completely convince Paul Chris to abandon everything he's done for the past decade plus, maybe. But I think it's just going to be tweaks. I think it's just going to be changes on the margins. So I don't think Wisconsin is going to really try and push the Iowa secondary and sort of throw into that aggressive zone. So, no, I'm with Wisconsin winning much in the way that they won last year, which is being a better version all around than Iowa. Now, I know Wisconsin lost what they lost last year, especially in the linebacking core. That's significant. It absolutely is significant. But they also have earned the benefit of the doubt in terms of what they've been able to develop internally. That what's changed with Iowa? Are we still talking about Spencer Petras and Alex Padilla?
We are.
Are we still talking about Brian Ferentz now, assuming even more power and more control?
We are.
And exerting more will over this offense? I'm happy to take Wisconsin, even though it's a tough spot to win. It's a tough spot to play. I mean, just it is. Iowa City just is a very, they just win games without being good on offense. So I'm still going to roll with Wisconsin being the right type of team to beat Iowa on the road.
I actually might have to throw some shekels down after we hit
stop. Oh, man,
here.
I convinced you?
Yeah, yeah. Because the other thing about Iowa that you didn't mention is that their line was not that good last year.
Right.
And typically the Iowa teams that do well, that win double-digit games and are actually as good as their record would indicate, which I could argue was not the case last year, they're better along the line. They're better at running the football. And they haven't been good at doing that in longer
it's
than you
It's been a while
think.
Since they've run the ball consistently.
Been a
well,
hot minute,
yeah.
Hasn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Week 12, Georgia by 16-17 over Kentucky. Wisconsin by 3 on the road at Nebraska. Again, I think Nebraska getting a little bit more love than they should, but okay.
But Clemson, is that also, you said this is the following week, right?
It's week 12, yeah.
So this is a week after Wisconsin is on the road against Iowa. They're on a road once again at Nebraska.
Yeah.
That might be a little bit fadey for that back-to-back.
Miami, a 7.5-point dog at Clemson. We've got USC okay. minus 6 at UCLA, okay. And the game that you highlighted, no, I highlighted mm-hmm. this one. I'm losing my own colors here.
Yeah.
Oregon minus 3 at home against Utah. My inclination was to say that Utah is the better team and Oregon's okay. only favored because they're at home, or in this case, because there's going to be more steam on Oregon, more interest.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that line to me. Does that make sense to you?
That Oregon's favored by 3?
Yeah.
I think Oregon's going to be a good team this year and they're playing at home in a very difficult place to win. And it's a double revenge spot based on how the season ended. And Oregon's head coach presumably hasn't already started recruiting for his next place, which is just an unfounded accusation I just made. But Mario Cristobal's head was in figuring out what he was going to do, whether or not to take the Miami job or not. So I think just Oregon's defense is going to be good. It's a good defense against, and I think it'll be a better defense than it was last year, even without Kayvon Thibodeau and Verone McKinley. And, you know, they lost a bunch of players. I think by this time, though, I think they're going to be better. I do. I really am a believer in this defense. A healthy Justin Flo, a secondary that has, you know, they've hit the transfer portal pretty hard. I mean, the defense in general. So I think they're going to be pretty deep and they're going to rotate guys in and out. I think they'll have a handle on the quarterback situation, he said famously in May, by the time this game is played. I think Autzen's just a very difficult place to win, no matter how good you are. And so
right.
I'm in on Oregon as being a rightful field goal favorite here.
I don't have a lean there. I was just curious
okay. about
perspective. Let's yep. go to week 13. I'm not going to rattle through all of these games because there are a bunch.
This is rivalry week, yeah.
This is rivalry week. Each of us highlighted a couple games.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go through the ones that you picked first.
Okay.
The lines that you like, if I am reading this color coding correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Florida minus 6 against Florida State is a game that you highlighted. I don't know mm-hmm. who you picked, but that's one game.
Yep.
Iowa minus 3 at home against Nebraska is another.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon minus 7 on the road, Platypus Cup against Oregon State. And then mm-hmm. Washington on the road, pretty much a pick 'em against Wazoo. Let's go through those four games quickly. What did you see that you liked in those four?
I like Florida State's defense. They're playing at home in a rivalry game. That's enough for me as a home dog to feel happy about that. Same goes for Iowa, and I still think that this Nebraska offense is the kind of offense that's going to throw into coverage in an unfortunate way, even though they were successful in doing it last year until they weren't. This was a Logan Smothers game, if I remember correctly,
Smothers,
was it not?
Yeah.
It was a Logan Smothers game, so they'll have a higher-level quarterback, but still, I like Iowa to force some turnovers here. I like Oregon on the road against Oregon State, even though it's a potential letdown game after maybe beating Utah or having an emotional loss to Utah the week before that. I'm just not in on the Oregon State defense at all. I think they should have their way, especially with how deep Oregon now looks at the skill positions. Wazoo against Washington. I'm just not sure what Washington has done since last year. They've gotten worse in the secondary, which was the clear strength.
Yeah.
Quarterback is fully up in the air. I don't think there's any way Michael Penix makes it this far into the season if he's named the starter at Washington. And so I just think it's going to be a tough back half of the season for Washington. It's a particularly thin squad in terms of talent. So, I mean, at least compared to where they've been these past few years. And I just think there are going to be better vibes at Wazoo right now. Now, if you feel like this, I think it's Incarnate Word is where the transfer.
Cameron Ward, yes.
Cameron Ward, which is very confusing with Word.
Yes.
Cameron Ward, if you're in on him, if you feel like he is the extremely rare FCS to FBS, or especially Power 5 quarterback transfer that works out, and you're high on him, then this is a no-brainer to take Wazoo. I'm a little bit less in on him than I think some early narratives may suggest on the West Coast, which there aren't. There's not a lot of buzz about Wazoo right now in the Jake Dickert era. But, I don't know, Apple Cup, rivalry game, 1 point. I just think Washington's more of an uphill battle right now, and Wazoo is just a wild card. So I'll go with the wild card as a 1 point favorite at home.
Okay. I don't hate it.
Where do you stand?
I'm with you. I'm with you on that front. The two games that I highlighted are South Carolina at Clemson. Clemson favored by 17.5. And then Auburn at Alabama. Alabama favored by 26. So look, let's start with the Iron Bowl.
Yeah.
That's a lot of points for the Iron Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
There is definitely a perception out there, especially on Rivalry Week, that this is all, you'll hear it a lot, this is always a close game. If you go back and actually look through that Iron Bowl, all right, in recent memory, I'm talking since 2008, basically since Saban got there.
Mm-hmm.
Saban has owned Auburn. There have been a couple exceptions, right? Three or four exceptions.
He's owned everybody, but yeah.
Right, where Auburn has won a game, and I think back to, 2017, they won by double digits, but pretty much all the other games they won have been close. Alabama's had some games in there where they won by like 31 points. All right.
Sure.
And that's just the course of the Alabama program under Nick Saban. I can't see laying that number in a rivalry game. Like, I am falling victim to this narrative that I just told you shouldn't fall victim to. But 26 points feels like an awful lot to me, especially in a rivalry game. I would probably be inclined to go Auburn.
So last year it was 21. Obviously, they cover that game. Or they don't cover the game. They win that game by 2 points. They don't cover against Arkansas. This Alabama team, if you're looking at the pairing or the triplet, the triumvirate of Nick Saban, Bill O'Brien, and Bryce Young, 8-7 against the spread last year. So whatever benefit they were given in terms of being favorites, and I think they were favorites until the national championship game, that first matchup of Georgia, yeah, they were not a favorite, and then the second matchup, they were not. It was +6 and +3. Otherwise, they were favored all year long. So what I'm seeing here, if I'm doing quick back of the napkin math, they cover that first, the SEC championship game as a dog, and they obviously don't cover the national championship game. So as favorites, they were right at 500.
Yeah. 26 is a big number, and clearly
they just didn't have a good handle. Yeah.
They're going to have the ammo to cover it, but it is a rivalry spot.
But are they? They had those cartoonish covers with top 12 level receiving talent with Jerry Jeudy and Devontae, all these guys. Do they have that? They have Jermaine Burton. They have guys, but it's not as obvious.
Well, it's
26
not
26 points. I don't know, man.
We're doing a week 13 line projection here. On May
I'm
the
just
17th,
there might be value right now.
The 17th, I think the value is on Auburn.
Yeah, okay.
If I'm being honest, and I'm not crazy about Auburn, you know, I don't like Zach Calzada. I talked about that 20 minutes ago. But 26 points is a lot, and they played him tight last year with a quarterback on one leg. They should have won. They should have gone for two.
Yep.
So maybe Harsin's a different kind of cat in this game. I don't know. But
here's the other thing too.
I'm curious about that game.
Alabama's not going to need, we don't think, they're not going to need, if they are a top five-ish team, to play for style points. Because it's sort of a win the SEC and you're in, unless you have three losses. It almost seems to be right now, the reality. So to say that, like, they're going to really need to pour it on to impress voters or something to beat Auburn, I don't think Auburn's going to be an especially well-ranked team at this point in the season.
I don't think so either.
So I just don't see them necessarily anyway, 31 to 35 points or something like that. So I'm in on just taking the emotion of a rivalry game. And even if Alabama blows the doors off of them, you know, Auburn can get a backdoor touchdown and lose by 22 or something.
The other game that I'm intrigued about is the South Carolina-Clemson game. The Palmetto Bowl. What's the big story this offseason as it relates to South Carolina, Dan?
Spencer Rattler.
Yeah, they got a lot better at quarterback. They lost this game 30-0 at home last year.
I was going to say, literally 0 points.
Lost this game by 30 at home. Did go on to win the Duke's Mayo Bowl. Mm-hmm. And Shane Beamer had the Mayo bath dumped upon his head.
Yep.
Bonked upon his head. But I don't know. 17 feels like a lot to me. And I think Spencer Rattler, especially with an enthusiastic coach like Shane Beamer, who's trying to build this thing quickly, feels to me like the type of matchup where they're not going to win. They're going to Clemson here. It's a tough place to play in Death Valley, but I could see him keeping it close on his arm and on his arm alone. I'm not saying I'm betting it now. I also think there's a chance this could be 21 by the time the game kicks off. So don't bet it now. Maybe if you like Clemson, bet it now. But I'm intrigued by that matchup at this point in mid-May. All right.
I'm always trying to be less mean in the way I look at things, because I know that I can fall into that trap. Didn't Spencer Rattler get benched last year?
He did, Dan.
Didn't he get benched playing for a Power 5 program with good receivers and a good offensive mind? It wasn't a great offensive line.
He did.
Okay. So quarterback gets benched, and he's going to a place that won't be as good up front, that doesn't have the receivers, that doesn't have the offensive mind calling plays.
I'm a romantic. What can I say?
I think he's better than what they started for a chunk of last year. They all scored 0 points against Clemson.
That game doesn't do much for me.
Okay.
I'm just calling the lineup. Two that you called out here quickly, and then we'll end this, I promise.
Okay.
USC favored by 2.5 at home against Notre Dame, and A&M favored by 9.5 at home against LSU. Why'd you highlight those games?
I highlighted USC because if you have a strong stance about USC right now, that their defense has a long ways to go, that their offensive line has a long ways to go, whatever, there's value in seeing them as a favorite against Notre Dame team that I think should be pretty good by the end of the year. Again, I think they're going to take their lumps. And I think people are going to say, oh, it turns out Brian Kelly was pretty good. But by the end of the year, I think if you feel strongly about either one of these teams, you should circle the possibility of wagering this game. Also, I like Texas A&M against LSU in this matchup.
Do you?
Who's starting a quarterback for LSU?
Probably everybody. You know right, where I stand on this.
Yeah, and same question about A&M. I get all that. A&M's a difficult place to play. I think the defense is going to be humming with DJ Durkin by this time. There's so much talent, and the freshmen will be worked in by this time. I think a receiver will emerge by then. And as much as I do like the potential in a lot of different areas for LSU, I think it's a great matchup for A&M, potentially.
I think LSU will be better than people expect.
Who's people? Me?
Yeah, you're people.
Okay, I'm people.
I'm curious to see how LSU fares this year. That's an interesting matchup. It's hard to really gauge from my standpoint because I don't know who's playing quarterback. At that point in the season for A&M.
Yep.
At that point in the season. Haynes King.
Either team. Yeah.
Right. We talked to Sam Kahn. Sam Kahn talked a lot about his conversations with Jimbo Fisher. And you alluded to it earlier as well. Jimbo likes Haynes King. He liked him last year. He named him the starting quarterback. Haynes King is a different kind of quarterback. He is more mobile. True dual threat kind of kid. And those types of quarterbacks have given Notre Dame fits. Now, they give everybody fits, to be fair. But Brian Kelly in particular has had problems with those types of quarterbacks, scheming a defense in a way that can curtail what they bring to the table. Part of the reason why I think that week one game against Florida State could be interesting. Despite what I said about Jordan Travis is a true dual threat guy. Maybe more of a runner than a thrower, but he's good. Okay, he's better than I thought. So that's of interest to me. That's an interesting matchup that I think could pose a challenge for Brian Kelly. It always has before. Looking forward to this game, there are just too many variables. I get why you would like A&M there. I totally get it, especially late in the season to that point, but I don't think we should discount what LSU has from a talent standpoint either. They've done pretty well. Quarterback might be the thing that we're all fixated on, but I do think that team by that point in the season, if we see out of this Brian Kelly team what we saw out of previous Brian Kelly iterations at Notre Dame, they play hard down the stretch. That could be a situation where A&M's got a target on their back. And if that's the case, I think Kelly will do well enough as a coach to keep that game relatively close. So I'm staying away there. I get where you're coming from. The USC Notre Dame one's interesting. I don't know what to make of either of those teams. My sense based on these lines is that everyone's favoring USC a little too much and that Notre Dame's all over the place. Right. Week one, you've got Notre Dame as a 13.5 point dog against Texas A&M or Texas A&M.
Ohio State.
Ohio State, excuse me. Week two against Cal, they're a 17-point favorite. I get it. Cal's not that good. They weren't last year, but they're better than people thought. And week two, after that big game, it seems to me like Vegas maybe doesn't have a great sense for Notre Dame either. So I would stay away from that one. I wouldn't bet that with $100 of your money. Just keep that one well away from me. But I do agree, if you like USC, there could be value there.
There is something about, if you're going to make me choose, maybe this goes against something I just said. I don't even remember what I said 10 minutes ago. There's something more dependable about a good defense late in the year. That there is something about effort, that there is something about lines specifically, that if you're good at preventing big plays, if you're good at getting after the quarterback, even if you lose, you can cover. And that's, I think, reflected on the teams that seem to perform well against the line. I'll side with defenses more often. I just think there's more that can be depended on.
No.
So
okay.
I think USC is going to be all over the place, because when they win, it's going to be with offensive fireworks. And when they don't, it's going to be because they can't get off the field on defense. And so that's where I think, if you like Notre Dame late in the year, that they're not reliant on transfers in the same way that USC is. And even though those transfers will be well acclimated to a USC system by then, there is something about Notre Dame. If you like Notre Dame, I think the good reason is that it's easier to bank on defense over the course of a year against the spread.
One other one that I'm calling out quick, and then we're going to end this thing.
Please.
Baylor getting 7 on the road at Texas, final week of the year. Mm. It is not beyond Texas for just a good week 13 bed crapping.
A 1-2-3 Cancun or a...
Not a 1-2-3 Cancun. Okay. They're not mailing it in, but
okay.
It is not beyond Texas to, especially against a well-coached team.
Yeah.
Dave Aranda led Baylor Bears. It is not beyond those Longhorns for a late season bed crapping.
Well, Baylor did come on strong to close out the year, win the conference. And let's see, Texas is at Kansas the week before Baylor. So that's not especially challenging. And Baylor will be, who do they have this year before Texas? I'm looking at their schedule. TCU. Okay, so the rivalry. So there's some emotion there. Okay. Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe Texas, has a championship game on deck. Perhaps a look-ahead situation. I don't know.
I understand where
you're coming from. It's week 13. Okay. It's May. I have no idea what to expect.
All right.
We covered a lot of ground here.
Yeah.
The whole season. We don't even need to do a podcast anymore. We just laid it all out there for you. Some early reactions to some of these early lines that we saw right in. SolidVerbal.
Yeah.
@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts. Please do follow along on social media. Tweet us, Facebook us, Instagram, whatever. Whatever you got, send us a message. Let us know where you stand.
Ty's home number, 610.
So, let's go through these, as we typically do, with our Verballers. Over on Discord, which you can find at verballers.com.
The best.
We'll talk through these lines. Great people. Good college football fans. Informed college football fans. We love each and every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about these lines over there. You know how to get in touch with us. We want to get your take on this. Frankly, if there is an angle that I have missed or something that I'm really off on, I would like to know about it, because I do have some money that I'm willing to invest here. So let me know. Let me know what I got wrong, what I got right, what Dan got wrong, what he got right. And come on back on Thursday. Gmail. What are we doing Thursday? Q&A?
Yeah, we're going to do a Q&A. And I guess you said you have a bunch of crypto tips that you're going to give out. Is that what you've been saying?
No. That's definitely.
Did I mishear that? Oh, I'm sorry.
Definitely misheard that. Yeah.
That's somebody else. Okay. That's all I have.
Thanks again for stopping on by. We appreciate your download, your support. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button if you like what you heard. Verballers.com is the Patreon. SolidGiveaway.com if you want to compete or at least get your name in the hat to win. Frank Beamer signed Mini Hill. For that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, we will be back on Thursday. In the meantime, stay safe.
Peace.